Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience in Mississippi, WYAD 94.1 FM, as well as joining us online through our friends at blogtalkradio.com, dcnowradio.com, as well as 106liveradio.com. Glad you all could join us, too. Susan E. Eaton is making her first appearance on our program today, and she's written a book that I think could not be more timely. And unfortunate, actually, I think, that we're in 2016, we're having to have a conversation like what Susan proposes in her book. The title is called Integration Nation, Immigrants, Refugees, and America at its Best. And what she really does, I think, is helps us to appreciate how so much more can be done when we look at individuals as helpers instead of course, as dividers, but also the importance of looking at individuals around this country and even around the world who are doing amazing things that don't always get attention in the media, but are definitely showing us what's possible. If you're just hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Susan, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Cyrus. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. You know, I have continued to be astounded. I'm 40 years old, Susan. I spent most of my life in Mississippi, and it really surprises me that it seems like in some ways that we are really going backwards when it comes to some of the discussions, you know, that we're having, some of the rhetoric that we hear. And I think a book like yours really does show that people are actually able, even the cover I think is beautiful, and that it shows people of different ages, races, being able to come together and actually do something instead of just talking. What has it been like for you already to see the way that people are responding to the book and the positive message of the book?
Oh, it's been great. And I tell you, it was a fascinating journey going across the country and learning about all the things that were happening, usually in communities, you know, in local communities that people were doing, both to welcome immigrants and then the work that immigrants themselves were doing to ensure that, you know, they could become full members of the places that they chose to settle in. And you talked before about us going backwards, and I think that what's happening is that there are these two impulses, right, in our American society. One is to exclude and reject and kind of imagine people as the other, and the other impulse is to accept and to integrate and to understand that we all live in this place together. And
right.
This book really concentrates on the expression of that second impulse.
Right. Right, and that's what I love about it because, again, you know, there's so much rhetoric out there, and I think to be able to have a book like this, Susan, that speaks to actual individuals, and I think that's the other thing about this that I really want our audience to get, and I'm so glad that we can speak with you as the book is just coming out, is that, you know, there are people around this country who are doing the work, who are having the tough conversations for our radio audience in Mississippi. Even Mississippi is profiled in a positive way in this book, something we don't always see when it comes to issues of race and, you know, class and those kind of things. What was that like for you, Susan? I mentioned to you before we went on here about the before and after. I mean, when you begin a journey like this, I know there's always the unknown variables, but what was it like for you to reflect on these relationships that have formed and the people you were able to meet?
Oh, I was really moved, and, you know, it just reminded me of the fact that, you know, we have a mainstream media that focuses on the conflict narrative, right? So where's the tension? Where's the hatred? Where's the anger? And that's what sells, and that's how, in large part, even the presidential race, I feel like, has been covered as well. But even when Arizona first passed its very restrictive, and I would say xenophobic law that restricted immigrants from moving and from having opportunities there, I just knew that this was not typical, that this was not the norm, and that what was going to be playing out across the country was a whole range of responses to immigration. And so what these meeting all these folks and talking to folks on the phone and visiting all these different types of communities showed me that there was a path forward, and that a lot of we already know what to do to have a more constructive, healthier, more prosperous, cohesive society. And that's to follow the example of many of the people that I wrote about in this book.
Yeah. You know what I also love is that they had optimism. The individuals that you were able to profile, Susan, had such optimism. I know in the chapter, Reclamation Space, Reclaiming Lives, there's that great comment from Harrison that I actually want to read a bit of. For those who have the print edition of the book, it's on page 85, and this is what Harrison says. This stretch of street has had its share of hard times, all kinds of challenges through history, and it's also a place with so many assets. To do this right, to make sure that everyone is included and has a voice in the future of this area, well, that's going to take a while, just like when you are trying to renovate an old theater. You need patience. But I can tell you that we are staying right here on the corner to contribute, to be part of what the future brings. That, to me, is a powerful thing. And to be able to think like that, and you know, was that also great for you to know that there were other people like Harrison that felt that same way, that even though it wasn't easy, that we were going to do what we can to work together to make things work?
Yes, absolutely. It was really inspiring. And it just showed, you know, time and time again, the people who I met, you know, realized, okay, my community is changing, and I have a choice to make. I can either, you know, be rejecting of that, try to make it go back to the way that it was, which isn't going to happen, or I can work with what's happening and find a way to make this constructive and, you know, a positive experience for everybody. And that's the common thing. I mean, each of these communities is very different. I looked at places that had very different types of immigrant and refugee groups coming in from different places across the globe. But the thing that binds all these stories together is the expression of that recognition that we all live in this country together. And if we work together and see each other as partners rather than adversaries, it's much more likely to turn out well for everybody.
Right. What a great thing, and what a great reminder, I think, for us all. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Susan E. Eaton is our guest. We're discussing her new book, Integration Nation. It's out now. Immigrants, Refugees, and America at its Best. And as I said, I cannot have this conversation with you, Susan, without talking about the chapter on Mississippi. I was so excited to see that we were in this book, and that, again, unfortunately, we don't always get the positive attention that we deserve, as a lot of places don't. But I was so excited to see Mississippi being featured here. What surprised you the most, though, about what you learned, not only about the growth of the Latino community in the South, but also in the way that Mississippians were handling it and being able to work together with others to make it easier for them?
Yeah, well, not all Mississippians, but absolutely the ones that I profiled, for sure. So after Arizona, a lot of states, and mostly in the southeastern United States, decided that they wanted to have a law just like Arizona's that was an anti-immigration law. And so their state legislators, representatives in their legislature proposed such laws. And the same was true of Mississippi. In many of the southeastern states, these laws passed, later to be eviscerated to some extent by federal courts or be unenforceable or whatever. But in Mississippi, the laws never passed. And a lot of people were perplexed. Like, of all places where you would think that such a law that was kind of rooted in xenophobia would pass would be Mississippi, but it didn't. And the reason it didn't pass was because African Americans in the state legislature, who had fought for decades, as you know, to get power, to get some power in the government, had it, and they used that power on behalf of Latinos. And they worked very hard to organize Latino immigrants who were working in the chicken processing plants, the meatpacking plants, and in other places, some as a result of staying after the cleanup after Katrina in Mississippi, and organized them to have an active political voice. And that worked. And what the leaders of this movement talked about was that you may want African Americans who may be struggling to earn a living wage and put food on the table in Mississippi, their enemy was not the immigrants who were being brought here because they were willing to work for less, but those big corporations that did that and then weren't providing anybody a living wage. And that it was very important to fight against anti-immigration laws and anti-immigration rhetoric. And it was very important for everybody to join in the fight for things like fair wages and economic justice and ensuring that women had prenatal care, for example. And so what has grown was a coalition of people who embraced an agenda that was going to benefit everybody. And that is something that was sort of an untold story that happened in a lot of places in the South. Even when the laws passed, you saw African-American legislators in Georgia and in Alabama working alongside Latinos who were newer to the state and did not have that political power and that representation yet, taking on this cause in very clear ways and in oftentimes using the same rhetoric that was employed during the civil rights movement, understanding and seeing that continuum and the importance of joining together for a variety of causes. And that I found very moving, and I also think very hopeful for the future as well.
Yeah. You know, there are, and I'm glad that you did say, you're right. I mean, not everyone is optimistic about some of the changes that are happening. But there was an interesting thing, though, a quote that you had from the Alabama senator, Gerald Dowell, in the book that I thought was so interesting. When he was talking about the bill, he said, one of my concerns is that this bill, for those who have the print edition on page 47, one of my concerns is that this bill opened up some old wounds that it didn't need to open. And then the next comment is the one that really struck me that I wanted to talk to you about, and that is all of that stuff from the 50s and 60s, Alabama is not like that anymore. What did you think about that statement in regard to what you saw and you heard? I mean, what were your thoughts? Did it feel as though that those things may not have been so far from us as we may hope that they are?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there's a lot. I mean, now what's happening in a lot of our politics, obviously, is it's less overt. You know, racism and xenophobia is, well, not as much xenophobia, but is less overt. Right, so people don't say, oh, we don't want to go to school with black people and we should pass a law that prevents black people from going to the same schools as white people, right? That doesn't happen. But there's all these kind of these racially tinged kind of statements that get thrown out there that basically imply this. And when you talk about immigrants in a certain way, it does kind of open up and re-trigger a lot of those things. And so I think you're right. Like I said at the beginning, I think that there are a lot of impulses in our society that tend toward either exclusion or inclusion. And it's important to pay as much attention to the efforts toward inclusion and the expansion of rights for everybody than necessarily always focusing on the negative. We need to stay alert to the fact that there's still widespread discrimination. And even if laws are off the books, they cast a very long shadow on our society for African Americans, for Latinos, and for other people of color, for sure. But we also need to find a path forward and away from that. We need to be fighting for something, not just against something. And I think that that's what some of the activity that we saw in the South between African Americans and immigrants forming alliances is one of those positive developments.
So what was the biggest surprise for you, Susan? I asked you before we went on here, I wanted to talk to you about going into this and then, of course, reflecting on it. What was the biggest thing that really, really stayed with you after you finished these trips, but also, of course, you know, finished this book?
I think it was probably that a lot of the activity that I went out and observed and a lot of the folks that I spoke to were they weren't ideological people, right? I mean, I come from a progressive mindset and I think that, you know, I'm going to vote for Bernie Sanders and all of that. And I guess I expected that I would find a lot of people who thought just like I did on all of the issues of the day. But the fact of the matter was there was a lot more variation than I thought, including many people, like, for example, in the state of Utah and even some in Mississippi and in Nebraska, who didn't necessarily see eye to eye with me on a lot of things, who perhaps were very religious people, which I am not a religious person. And I found that they all understood they have all shared a basic understanding, again, that we live in this country together, we have a future with a far more diverse country than it used to be, and we need to make it work for everyone. And that starts with fairness and accepting each other, accepting differences, and celebrating that, and drawing upon the assets that people have. And so I was, you know, I got the opportunity to meet people who were, you know, very staunchly Republican, but the way that we thought about immigrants and immigration was very similar.
Wow. What a great thing. And I think it ties in perfectly to the latter part of the subtitle of the book, America at Its Best. And I think that's when we're at our best, when we're able to see past what might be seen as differences, but also to look for a common goal, a common purpose, and also common good. And I think that is one of the great things. So glad to be able to talk about a great book that is forward-looking, I think that is positive, but also addresses the problems. Again, not sugarcoating what is happening and what has happened, but allows us to know that there are people out there that are may not get the media attention, may not, you know, be, you know, on the front of the newspaper, but definitely are doing what it takes at the ground level. And I think that's the thing. Do you hope that's what other people take away? Because one of my big takeaways for the book, Susan, was just that, that you don't have to have a position. You don't have to have this major platform. You can just do good where you are.
Yes, absolutely right. I think that's right. And then the decision to move forward. This is a moving train. You need to make a decision about where you stand. Our country is becoming more diverse, and we need to find a path forward, and we need to find a path above really divisive rhetoric.
Right. Exactly. Well said, well said. Again, everyone, Susan E. Eaton has been our guest for this segment. We've been discussing her book, Integration Nation, Immigrants, Refugees, and America at Its Best. It is, I think, a powerful look not only at this country, but also how individuals are definitely being able to make a difference. You know, as I think this is my first book of yours for me to read, Susan. You know, you have been able to already be able to connect with people through your other work. You know, what has that been like for you to use the spoken word to be able to have these kind of conversations and to be able to get people to thinking differently?
Yeah, I mean, it really allows me to go into places and to cross paths with people who my ordinary life, you know, at a university wouldn't allow me to do. And so just personally, it's been incredibly rewarding. And I used to be a newspaper reporter, and we were taught to focus on, you know, two things, both the conflict, right, and then also the unusual. And so I think I've been able to kind of go into places and focus on unlikely places, for example, where there are incredible and very important things happening that deserve recognition that otherwise would go unnoticed. It was a great privilege to meet everybody who I met as a result of writing this book, and to visit places that I ordinarily probably wouldn't go.
Well, what a
but
great
we'll go
thing.
Back to now.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. I like that last part.
Well, I love good. Mississippi.
Yeah, well, good. I do too, Susan. I do too. I need to get more people to see the state the way that you and I have gotten to see it. And I think that's the thing, because it really is about the people. And I think that is the thing. And as you said, to be able to move forward. And when you're able to do that, I think that's the main thing. Do you also hope that a book like this too, Susan, because one of my concerns has always been that people are not seen as people. And I think just as I mentioned that comment from the senator about, you know, we're not like that anymore, that this book puts names out there. It puts individuals, organizations out there that are doing things. And it lets people know that it's not just about these numbers that you hear about or these, you know, these faceless groups. This really is about people's lives that we're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, our national immigration policy, which is where most of the focus is and most of the attention in the media, really engages very contentious questions, right? It's mostly about who can stay in the country and who needs to go, who belongs, right? And at the municipal level, at the local level, immigration, as you said, is about people coming into a community, people putting their kids into schools, people looking for work, people looking for joy, for love, for social engagement. And that's, you're absolutely right on target. That's what gets missed in these kind of, you know, high-level arguments about who belongs and who doesn't, is the story of ordinary people and their dreams and their relationships. And that's what I think if we focused more on that, and the ordinariness of a lot of lives too, and the simple beauty in a lot of lives, I think that we would get a lot further in the discussion.
Exactly. What a great thing, and what a great reminder again for us all. Again, everyone, Susan E. Eaton has been our guest. Integration Nation is the title of the book. It's available right now through our friends at Amazon.com, so definitely take advantage of getting it there for yourself. You can also go to the publisher's website, which is The New Press. That's www.thenewpress.com. Very simple there. And Susan is also on Twitter. We've already tagged her on our page. So if you head over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb, you'll see her Twitter handle there, so make sure you guys follow her there. Susan, really appreciate the conversation today. Great, great being able to speak with you. Really enjoyed the book, and hope to have you on the program again.
Oh, thank you so much. It was really fun. Have a great day.
Hey, you do the same thing, Susan. And we thank you, our audience, for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. For our radio audience, you all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. But us joining us online, though, we are going to lose you. So if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. The great thing is, if you're joining us online, you can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available, as I said, through our friends online. So head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You'll find the link there. You can click on the link, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.